What's Up Fool Podcast. Welcome to the What's Up Fool Podcast. It is 100 degrees outside. We got Rodrigo here.
That's what I'm talking about. It is fire season. Yeah, man. Rodrigo Torres in the house. What up, Felipe? Talk to us, dog.
Fire season, man. That means fire ants. What's up, black ants?
Yeah, they'll sting you, dog. Stay away, fool.
Stay away from Pam. The red ants, I think for me, the scariest
they'll
ants
get you too.
Are the black ones, dude, because I never see them, but when I see them, they're huge.
The pecan, dog.
Oh, fool.
What,
dog? Wait, something hilarious?
Talk to me, dog.
I don't want to brag you, man, but I tried to do a bomb yesterday. I tried to jump in my pool. Got stung by a bee, dog.
At the same time, bees, stingrays, you got to stay out of the water, bro.
I know, bro. The water ain't for me. I'm not aqua, man. I'm aquanet.
And was it a bee or a wasp?
I don't know, man, but when I got to the other side of the water, the ocean, it's in the pool. Yeah, this guy has a fucking huge pool. Now, when I got to the other side, I just dusted something now. I thought it was a branch, but it looked like a bee.
Uh-huh.
And man, it's dog. At first, I thought it was a belly flop burn because it was burning the side of me. But then all of a sudden, fool, it got hot. Then I turned into a baby. At least I had to jump out of the water and look for medication.
Get the rattlesnake venom.
Get in it, man. Suck this blood out of here. So, man, that hurt. What's up, fool? I'm in La Colita.
In the house. How you doing?
I haven't seen you forever, bro.
What's happening, big dog? Likewise.
I met one of those comedians that I know he was there where I was at because his picture was there.
Oh, hell yeah.
He's always there.
You too.
Him and Dominic Rivera are a week or a month before I get there.
Dominic Rivera.
I love Dom Rivera.
What's up, fool? With no further ado, we have Ahmed, a comedian that I met years ago, man, when we had a room at Whittier, bro.
Oh, in Whittier?
It was called, hold on a second. It was
Sticks.
No, it was called, everybody used to do it.
Wow.
No, it was in Pasadena, you had it.
Way before the rock and
roll. Are you talking
night?
About that one? Are you talking about the room in Montebello?
No, well, you had a room and also in either Q's. Whittier. Q's, that's right.
Q's in Pasadena, wow, that's right.
Everybody to go there, man. Willie, Jeff.
Freeze
Fluffy,
Love.
Fluffy, Freeze Love.
Was that before?
Eddie Griffin. This was 1994.
Yeah, man.
Damn.
Because I was working at a restaurant in Pasadena. I was working at Kevin Costner's restaurant. And we used to do a comedy night there.
And then they
canceled it. And I was like, well, I'm going to go find another room. And then we just walked into Q's one night. They had that side room, remember?
Yeah.
It was like a billiard hall. And then there was like this side room with the stage. It was perfect for comedy.
And look, the stage was the lights on and not all the lights.
Uh-huh.
With the regular light on, not the DJ lights on and the club lights. It looked like a fucking school auditorium, bro.
No, it was like it was a deep room, remember?
Yeah, it was deep. Like an auditorium with no seats.
And we had to put chairs in there. And then every night, man, Rainer and Freeze Love would close it out every night. Remember that? Eddie Griffin would come in there.
Do an hour, fool.
Damn, dude. Is that Voodoo Child days?
Voodoo Child.
Mm.
Or is that after?
Gosh, I don't know.
That's old. 94.
Probably before, yeah, 94. Yeah, what was that room in Montebello
Wild Coyotes. Tortillas.
Tortillas, no. Before that.
Gotham's.
Was it called Gotham's?
It was called first Gotham's when you went there.
So he then was going back there to Gotham's back in the day when it's called Gotham's?
Well, no. When I first started doing comedy, somebody said, hey, man, you got to go check out this room. It's in Montebello. You know, and it's like, back then it was you. It was
Willie
Barcena.
And Jeff. And
Jeff Garcia. And
Fluffy.
And Fluffy.
Yeah.
You guys were like the five like main,
the main
faces
dudes.
I remember. That's when I first started.
We're the only one that could walk in there, man, and bump somebody.
But the crowds were always great. That's
yeah,
they're
an awesome crowd because they pay to get in, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Free show.
They were charging $2, $3. They always charge them.
Yeah.
Because, no matter what.
Because they started charging them because they used to have a really, really hot karaoke night on Friday. I mean, the Mongols will show up, bro, and sing
God Bless America.
Rolling Stones. But it was a good room to try out stuff, but no, man.
It was rowdy, too, though.
It was rowdy, yeah.
Really rowdy.
Rowdy,
you know,
though.
East L.A., basically, just people just shouting shit out for no reason. You know?
They didn't know, man. They were open micing as an audience.
Right. That's right.
I used to, man. But see, I used to tell the audience sometimes, you know, man, it's not my fault that I was horrible tonight. You guys failed as an audience. You guys are horrible. You're the worst audience ever. You guys are not ready to go to a laugh factory. Right. You guys are not ready for someone to walk up to you and tell you, sir, it's a 2-drink minimum.
Right. You're not ready for sitcoms.
No, man. You're not ready for anything, man.
God damn.
They just want to yell.
Sorry, dog.
I remember this chola. I have to say chola because she is a chola. And they had just finished the Raiders. The Lakers were playing in the playoffs and they had to stop the game to do comedy because it's comedy night. So the game was already over. And then I brought up this ventriloquist, Homeboy from the Hood.
Wood from the Hood?
Wood, not Wood from the Hood.
No, the Wood Dog. Oh, no, the original Willie and Lester? Is that
no,
it?
Man, they got the big gums, big teeth.
Is that the one that was called Woody then? Because that dude from Moval is that other guy.
There's Woody Wood from the Hood.
Yeah.
The Woody.
Oh, and Woody, okay. And then there's that other guy, dude.
Willie.
Roscoe and that.
Roscoe is the guy that goes to Venice Beach that you grew up with.
Yeah, that fool.
And then there's Willie and Tyler, the Will old Tyler, school.
That's right. What I was
the
thinking.
And then there's an older guy.
That has Woody?
Yeah.
That's a fool?
Yeah, that fool, his doll is dressed up like a hood dude.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. He does USO tours, that guy?
Yep.
Man, that guy, we were doing a show in CSUN, and he was trying to be, you know, like comedian, joke around, you know, like, I might do a joke, you know, whatever the situation is. You know, comedian like busting out jokes. But I never hung out with a ventriloquist guy, bro. His dog busted a joke.
His dog talking on his
dog mirror. Busted a joke.
What did he say, bro?
Fool, he looked at me, because there was a lot of, like, African dolls hanging, you know, Mexican dolls hanging, you know, those fucking those skulls, bro.
Day of the Dead shit.
Day of the Dead everywhere. Yeah. Voodoo dolls. And then he looked over at me and goes, yeah, man, Woody kind of scared right now. And then the fucking wood puppet said, I didn't laugh, dog.
It creeped you out.
Fuck yeah. It creeped me out, dude, because I figured if you're a ventriloquist, that motherfucker's only for the act. You can't just bust it out like we're talking politics and that fool busted out. Yeah, man. Build the wall.
A little opinions.
Well, they had one of those. Who had one of those? Conan, was it? Didn't Conan O'Brien do that on his show for a while? He had some hood dog, that puppet that
oh,
came
yeah,
out.
Oh, yeah, the one.
It wasn't a ventriloquist.
Insult dog.
Yeah.
That's right, insult dog.
For me to poop on.
Spiegel, that dude.
And then another time, the best ever ventriloquist was Hugh Moore, bro.
How do you know all these Shy ventriloquists, Tony. Man? I don't even know any.
I watch bad comedy.
Willie and Tyler are the only guys I know from the comedy store.
You know who Hugh Moore is, right? Writer, mm-hmm. Hugh Moore? He was on that Sinbad show, and he came out there. His name was Shy Tony. And he brought a little puppet, right? But the puppet didn't say shit. He just whispered him in his ear. He goes, shh, shh, shh. Yeah, Shy Tony said he'd happen to be. But he's not even a ventriloquist. It was just a sketch. Yeah.
That's funny.
It was hilarious, dog.
It was funny.
And then he did that little Frankenstein.
Speaking of bad comedy.
What happened?
I was doing a show in Tucson, Arizona with myself, you know, and Paul Rodriguez. Paul Rodriguez went up first.
Oh.
Dude. It was 106 degrees outside. And, you know, they wanted two comedians to perform first outside and do 20 minutes, you know.
Oh, it was an outside gig?
Fuck yeah, dog. Oh, I didn't know what I got there.
Yeah, you can't do comedy in heat like
dude,
that.
Dude, we were like this. Hey, you got to get to it.
God damn,
we needed a visor, bro. We needed something.
You mean an umbrella.
Paul Rodriguez, I knew, why is Paul Rodriguez bringing a bag? Oh, and, like, he got to the room like a professional. He had show clothes and come outside clothes.
Right.
So he put on his show clothes. He you know, like sometimes, you know, it's 25 minutes. Paul Rodriguez said, fuck it, eh? He just started walking into the audience and started making fun of fools like he was doing that show in San Quentin, bro. He was just making fun of everybody in the audience, took photos. He did a meet and greet for like 15 minutes.
During the show?
Yeah, then another 20. So he did like 30. Then I went up there. So by that time, more people were sitting down.
Mm.
And I got laughs for 26, 29 minutes. I got off. And then that band Tierra wanted me to bring them up, bro. That's where I fucked up.
Why?
I went up there to do some, but I busted out a cowbell, dog. These motherfuckers who didn't know who the fuck I was thought I was crazy, dog.
That's
because it felt like pay attention. I thought that shit was gonna kill them.
What happened?
So somebody said, "Where'd you fucking get the cowbell from?"
Damn,
because they have to put that shit up on a drum still. Oh. They were sitting up behind me.
You took what it from the drum set?
For a cowbell, dog. Fucking idiot, dog.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
But I
sometimes.
Did it, man. Grammy winner. Tierra.
Damn.
I try to bust out a joke because, okay, man, Tierra did the best of Tierra. Then they did the best of the mixed Tierra. Then the best of the best of Tierra, too, because war was late.
Oh, are you serious, dude?
Yeah.
War was scheduled?
I never see. I've seen comedians try to go over and do more time while the right. headliner's late.
Right.
But I never seen a band,
stretch,
bro.
Stretch.
When they were singing, they were looking for a band member from the other band to bring him up on stage for a little encore. Hey, we have Malo, the singer of Malo. The fan of Boo shows up and starts singing.
They should have been like, we got Paul Rodriguez and Felipe Esparza. You guys come back and do another set.
Paul Rodriguez did go back up and tell people. He goes, knock, knock. Who's there? War. War's going to be late.
That's hilarious.
And then when we were leaving, there was people like telling, because I wouldn't go to my room, you know, smoke a little joint, come back, see if War shows up. So I went back to, when I was leaving to my room, this lady stopped me, you know, because she's, oh, excuse me. I met you backstage with Paul. Mama wants to know if war's gonna go on soon, because we have to go pick up our family right now. They're over there,
like you're
picking
the
up their family, like
a promoter.
Like,
or what?
She's a chick on the stage, bro. Like she's telling me her personal problem, bro. Like she had to go. Her mom had to go pick up somebody up. Do you feel that, like, people who love comedy now, they feel like they have a right to ask you all types of questions that don't even matter, got to do with fucking comedy?
All the time.
What do you get, Amira, man?
Nonsense.
Man, I get, like, a lot of political shit. You know?
Oh, right.
You know, like, so, you
were back from a plane, huh?
Well, what do you think, you know, what could happen with the world? I'm like, I don't even know. You know, we got a new fucking president. I get a lot of cultural misunderstanding, too. You know, people are like, oh, that's nice. You guys are from, you know, you're from Iraq. Like, not from Egypt. Like, yeah, okay. Well,
Egyptian lover,
huh?
Baby.
It's all the same. Yeah, you guys are all.
Ding, ding, ding.
But people always tell you the problems. People always want to come up to you and say, oh, and here's the thing I hate the most. Man, I got a funny joke for you. You should use this on stage.
Every time.
I hate that. I always say, no, you don't, and save your breath.
You tell them that?
I say that sometimes. Sometimes I'll get a little funny one, but I'm like, that's a hack. I heard that before. You got that out of a book.
Right.
But sometimes people think their jokes are so funny, and I'm just like, man, no. That's not
going to happen.
Just keep doing. Be an accountant.
You're lucky, bro. I got people coming at me in Spanish with jokes. I got waiters, cooking staff, because I pass by. When you're at the improv, you got to pass the cooking staff to get into the kitchen. Something yeah. You might spill on grease. You know, you get all pretty to go up on stage. You walk on stage, you smell like fries, bro. So the fucking bison in Houston comes up to me. He goes, hey, cabrón, you también estoy chistoso, güey. He goes, basically, I'm funny too, güey. Yeah, bro, that's why you're cooking fries. Right. Right. You're the funniest guy in the line. You're not even a sous chef. Yeah, so they some of those jokes in Spanish are funny, but they're not jokes that I would say on stage.
Because they don't translate.
They don't translate, man. They're not funny.
It's the same thing in the Arab culture. Arabs will tell you a joke in Arabic, and they always go, it sounds much better in Arabic. Yeah.
Sorry.
They'll say it in English. It sounds better in Arabic. And then they try to say it in English, and it never works. Or in Arabic, it never works. But they always have, like, Arabs have a really dry sense of humor. Like, you know, you they'll be like, that's what's funny. You know, it's like, are you going to kill me? Or... You know, you never know if they're actually being honest or whatever. It seems like it's opened up a little bit more with the Arab culture, but I think the Latin culture is really the most flavorful culture when it comes to humor, even like more than Black people, I think.
Oh, yeah, man.
No, because Black people love stand-up comedy, but mm-hmm. Latinos, you guys love to laugh, man. And
you
guys show up on time, too, so, you know. That's what counts.
Latinos love tickets. To laugh, but they'll give everybody the benefit of the doubt. Not like Black people, like some audiences, like they right away could sense fear.
I ain't going mm-hmm. here.
Like Wild Coyotes, bro, they'll sense fear.
Oh, yeah.
Once they start sensing premise, oh, here we go.
Well, I was at the improv one night showcasing for the Tonight Show, and I don't know why they chose Mo Better Mondays. But they were like,
damn.
Yeah, Bob Reed back at the time was booking. He's like, look, come down to the improv on Monday. I hadn't been in LA in a while, so I didn't realize it was a Black room. And D-Ray is running it. You know, he hosted. And D-Ray's my friend. So he does some time, and he brings me up. And they said, do 4 minutes. Don't touch the mic stand. Just talk as if you're going to do a tonight set show, you know, whatever. And I was like, all right. I went into my first joke, nothing. Second joke, crickets. Third joke, some black woman from the back of the room yelled out, say something funny, motherfucker. And then everybody just chimed in like a pack of wolves. And they booed me off stage. And I said, all right. I feel like a substitute teacher. Thank you very much. I walked off stage. And D-Ray went up and, like, reamed them. You stupid motherfuckers. That's my friend. He was showcasing for the Tonight Show. You guys got to have more respect. You guys will boo Cat Williams. And he just, like, ripped into the audience and, like, you know, like, schooled them on my behalf. It was weird. Like, I never had a comic go tell an audience, you know, hey, you can't act like that. He's, you know, he was trying out something new. And then he came up to me afterward. But it was a weird experience because they don't have, they smell fear. They only have a little bit of patience. And then if they don't like you, boom, you're out. It's like, you don't catch that wave, man.
You gotta catch the wave, man. You can't be going in with a long ass story if they don't know your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If they don't know you, just get to the punchline.
Get to the first funny joke you have, the second one, the third, and then do your long story.
Right.
Because you can't
catch him.
You gotta be, you can't be up there going, man, just, let me tell you about today. Snacks.
Yeah.
You know what happened to me at Bonds?
I'm gonna go up here pontificate.
What's up, fool? What's Remember, up? Fool, we used to run into Ahmed Ahmed at the bowling alley. Bro.
Yeah, dude.
Hollywood
Lane.
That's
right. They tore it down and, like, tore a school or something.
Well, tell people how was that the spot 24 that, hours that, a day?
Back in the day, Hollywood Lanes was 24 hours a day. What was it, on Santa Monica Boulevard?
Yeah.
Bowling. They had a bar. It was all, and you always see, like, celebrities in there. Like, ran, like, Keanu Reeves.
Rock stars.
Rock stars, celebrities. And no one would ever bother them.
Nobody.
That's why they would go in there. I used to go in there with some actor friends of mine, and we used to always see, like,
Vince Vaughn.
Vince used to go in there together, and Peter Billingsley, Cole Hauser, some of these, like, young Hollywood actors I used to hang out with back in the day. But you'd always see these really, like, uber, like, Vince wasn't that famous back then. He was, like, this was after Swingers, and, like, he hadn't done, like, his big movies yet, so he wasn't really on the radar. But then you'd see, like, big A-list movie stars hanging out in there. And just drinking, like, cold beers and bowling. And then you'd see, like, all these, like, you know, Mexican families hanging out, you know?
They live around.
Yeah.
That's why it was so cool because, you know, the families, oftentimes the families wouldn't even know Keanu Reeves was bowling next to them.
Right.
Because he just didn't look, you know, you just would never expect, you know, a guy like that there or whatever. But that was a cool place, man. Hollywood Billiards, remember that place? They took all that stuff down, man. Back in the late 90s.
Hollywood Lays, bro, those balls were chipped.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Remember?
Everything is messed up in there. The when pins.
It'll take you an hour to find a good bowling ball, bro.
Yeah, that's true. They had a good jukebox.
They had a good jukebox and they had a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they fought Big Lebowski there.
Yeah, those that's were the
right.
White Russian
We were going
days.
There before Big Lebowski,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the 90s.
Because you were in Swingers.
We ran into him a couple times.
When I saw you in Swingers, I was like, oh, look, I met real quick. You know that guy? That was the seed.
Tight.
Mystery, I had two lines. I'm the actor who always has to explain the part he's in. Like, if somebody says, hey, you seen this movie? And they go, yeah, he was Mike in some, you know, that movie.
He does this.
They go, I go, no, I'm like, you remember the scene in the movie when the house is on fire and everybody's running out? And the last guy that ran out, that wasn't me. There was one more guy after him. That was me. You know, I had a red shirt on, and people are like, oh, yeah. And I always have to explain my role.
I remember when I used to bring up Ernie G, bro, for Jerry Maguire.
Oh, shit.
Never seen that shit, man. You guys want to watch it about Jerry Maguire? Wait till it comes out on DVD, bro. Pause that shit.
He made the bonus feature. Which one is he?
I didn't even know.
You see his back.
You see his back giving an autograph with a trench coat, bro.
Oh my god.
Like, we really gotta pause it, right?
I remember that phone telling you gotta tell him about Jerry Maguire, bro.
Talk about Jerry Maguire. Hey. I used to get embarrassed when people tell me to bring up their credits because then the crowd believes that I believe too.
Yeah. I don't like doing that.
I don't hear.
Oh, that is shit.
Back in the day, you used to always want to be like, oh, you know, tell him this, tell him that. It's not like there's an agent in the room in Arizona who's gonna
book
you.
I've been trying to catch this fool. Right.
Finally, I see him.
Right, right. Oh, so I'm going to catch him in Wisconsin. You know, that's where he's going to make his big break there. If you're like, even if you're doing like a showcase or something, it doesn't matter. Like, okay, you were on this. What are you doing now? Like, what does it mean now? You know, I always think it's funny. Comics will always be like, you know, tell him I just finished my half hour Showtime special, doing a guest spot on the so-and-so show. It's like, okay, well, just Google you. Like, we don't need to.
Hey, tell him
IMDb
I'm,
you.
Tell him I'm working on my new HBO special. We are our bro. That's our goal in life.
Tape your resume to your shirt, dog. God damn.
Oh man.
What up?
The best one was with that comedian who passed away. The one that was in Heat. He used to have the room in Long Beach, La Cave. What's his name? He just passed away.
What's he look like?
Black.
Oh, that the guy. Was in the Snoop Dogg video and everything. Yeah. Damn.
Welcome dude. To the Colorado. Horse.
Yeah, dude. I'm fucking drawing a blank here, dude.
Ricky Smiley.
Ricky nah. Smiley? No.
Ricky Hooks.
Ricky, oh, I know you're talking about. Ricky
Harris?
Ricky Harris was hosting a show that I was on. And another comedian, the black comedian, went up there. I think it was Snowball or Snow Cone.
Snow Cone.
Snowman. Dog. I don't know what they call him.
Snow something.
Snowed him, bro. I don't know.
He pulled out the harmonica at the end.
Yeah, no, not that white guy. He was a black dude. He smelled like a. He just left a barber shop, bro, and ran without paying. That fool went up a stage and he promoted another show.
God damn.
That was going to happen on that spot on Friday.
Times
yeah, Earthquake will be there. Sissy Peniston will be there. Snoop Dogg said he might be there. Fool, Ricky Harris went up there. What's up with that homie fucking name dropping up here? And then he had the DJ play like a small little beat. And they were going, and it was like he was giving out a shout out. Yeah, man, you ever notice a motherfucker be out here just name dropping? So he played like a little beat. Boom. He was like going with a beat, yeah. And also Snoop Dogg's gonna be here. Martin Lawrence said he might show up if we gotta find a babysitter. he's like a 10-minute bit about shout outs.
Was that fool still in there?
Yeah, dude.
Hilarious, dog.
He was snowballed. What's up, fool? Hey. I remember I saw Vince Vaughn on the Tonight Show when he was promoting that tour you were on, the Wild West tour, and he mentioned you.
Yeah, man, that was cool.
He said you were detained. And your parents were pissed off that you were a comedian.
They, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how your parents started out when you first said you were going to be a... I told my mom and dad I was going to be... I told my dad I'm going to move to Hollywood to be an actor and a comedian. And he said, what are you, a gay? He said, I said, huh? He said, what are you? You're a gay. I said, it's not a gay. It's just gay. But no, I'm not. And then he's like, you're going to join a cult and the Jews run Hollywood and you're never going to work. And I was like, just slow down. Just slow down. And he was kind of right.
he probably thought you're going to be an agent.
They didn't like it at first. And then I got my first, I think, what was the first movie? I did a small, I played a terrorist.
ABC after school movie? Or was that before that?
No, that was after that.
Okay.
I was an extra in that. That's why I met Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley.
Right,
they were both. Peter was a child star. He was the kid from A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
And then his career kind of, you know, was
shoot
kind of,
your eye out, kid.
It was kind of declining as an actor, but then he was kind of coming up as a producer, editor. Now he's a big producer, director, and stuff now. But at the time, his career was kind of dwindling as an actor, and Vince Vaughn was unknown at the time. And they played best friends in this after school special, and I was an extra on the show. And we just all became friends. And then, you know, they did this tour, which was really cool. But the movie I did after that was Executive Decision, where I played Terrorist Number 4.
Number 4,
dog. And then, and then funny, in the credits, it says the terrorist name, Ahmed.
Harrison Ford, right?
And then it says Ahmed.
Harrison Ford in that movie?
No, Kurt Russell.
Damn.
Same thing, airplane movie with terrorists. Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
And then my dad was like, oh my God, that is my son. We're so proud. I was like,
fool,
you didn't talk to me for 7 years.
And damn, are you serious, dog?
My dad disowned me, man.
They don't fuck around.
He was well, you know,
did they give you a chance to try it out before he disowned you?
No, dude, like right out of the gate. Because, you know, when I first got to Hollywood, I didn't know anybody. I was a waiter, I was a personal trainer, I went to acting classes. I was just like,
came
struggling.
Came out here cold?
Cold. I didn't know anybody.
Because you're originally from Riverside.
From Riverside. I grew up in Riverside. And I thought, for me, LA from Riverside was like a big, sparkly place, you know, in Hollywood. And I was like, you know, fuck it, man. I'm going to go try it. You know, I'm going to see if I can, you know, sink my teeth into it. And I just kind of fell in love with it, right? But yeah, it was a hard, you know, then, you know, so my dad. The whole time, the whole journey, he was just like, you know, because all the other Arab fathers would have sons, and they're like, my son just got his master's degree in engineering. My daughter just got her PhD in medical. What is your son doing? He is a gay. He moved to Hollywood. He joined the cult. And, you know, it's like, And then, so now it's the, you know, the worm turn. Now all his friends were like, your son, we're so proud. Can he sign this for my daughter? You know, it's crazy how like it all comes around full circle.
When I was in, we were in Houston. I think the first time we were in Houston, I don't know if you were with me, we were driving with our cab driver. And our cab driver was talking about how he used to own all these businesses before. I remember he used to own a pet shop. He opened a lot of pet shops. He was a business. He was an Arab guy. He goes, oh, man. He was telling me everything. I had seven businesses. My brother came, stole it, you know, whatever, right? But he kept saying how much he loved the axis of evil.
Oh, really?
I mean, he loved it.
Serious? Oh, that's cool.
Ahmed, man. he was funny. He was like, to him, it felt like finally, you know, someone does comedy and speaks about us here in America.
On the map.
It's like when the first time somebody saw Paul Rodriguez for the first time.
Sure. It was good, dude.
It was like, you know, you guys were like the first man on the moon to them.
You know who I pay tribute to for that whole thing is Mitzi Shore, the owner of the Comedy Store.
Is that where you guys started it?
She started a thing called Arabian Nights. It was
Arabian Nights.
But then we switched it with the name to Axis of Evil because President Bush coined the phrase and we stole it. Axis of Evil. But Maz Jobrani is Iranian, so we were getting a lot of, you know, Iranians saying, "Don't you can't call it the Arabian? Oh, we're not Arab, we're Persian." I'm like, "The empire's dead."
The empire's dead. I like that.
I saw 300, but okay, we'll change the name. So then we changed it, and then we got on Comedy Central. We went to the Middle East and did our big Middle East tour, then split up and did our own shit. We're talking about doing a reunion, 10-year reunion tour this year in the Middle East, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, man, that was a trippy thing because it was like walking on the moon a little bit. It was a little bit like, because no one else was doing it.
Yeah, we're first.
No one was doing it, you know, not really like on the scale that we were doing it. And, you know, much like you guys, you're pioneers in the sense where like you really spoke to the people, you know, and people wanted to hear that. They were
sorry,
like, finally.
When we were on that show, Que Locos.
Yeah.
That's how it was, though. Dude.
Yeah.
It's like we tapped a new young audience.
The young generation.
Never seen.
Right.
They knew, like, their parents knew who George Lopez was, but their kids didn't know who George Lopez
right.
was.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That was like now
George Lopez got a whole new audience. But there were people were excited, man. Like,
dude, all those shows were badass. Even before he hosted, when it became Que Locos, from that time he did in Bobby Bites and all that shit, and then it started getting real good. And then George Lopez hosted, and it was real good. You guys were over there having like slamming ass sets. It was just like a whole new thing.
Is that how you guys felt in the beginning? Were you guys like nervous? Were they going
to
work out?
In the beginning, well, Mitzi Shore was letting us use the Comedy Store to like craft our material. And then it started getting good and like, you know, and we were doing all self-deprecation material, you know, like, oh, I can't fly anywhere. And, you know, my name's on 9 lists and, you know, I got to show up to the airport in a G-string and shit like that. Like, those were the first jokes back then. Then they started evolving into like stories. People, like I said, they got it. They get on your side. But in the beginning, we were testing it out. We knew that we had something good when we went to Washington, D.C. and sold 2,000 seats at the Warner Theater. And it was funny because we were trying, the improv was giving us Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays.
Same here.
And then we were like, hey, can we get a weekend? And they were like, nope, you're not headliners. And we were like,
you were selling out Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I bet.
Bro, and turning people away. And then we were like, can we just get a weekend? Yes. And they kept on saying, no, we didn't really have credits back then and all that stuff.
And that's no TV.
They're selling out Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday.
So then,
oh my God.
So then we were like,
on the hard nights.
I called Maz. Yes. This is when we decided to take it upon ourselves.
Valet was happy.
I called Maz and I said, hey, man, you know, this is bullshit. We should take it to the next level. And he said, great, let's rent a theater. So we rented the Lisner Auditorium. That's what it was. Lisner Auditorium. It sat, I believe, 1,400 seats. And we turned away 200 people. And the improv managers came down. And they were like, we should have.
Idiots.
And then we never went back. We just always did theaters after
that. Oh, really?
Because okay. we knew we had an audience. We were making, we made $54,000 that night in one night.
Each? Like,
no, we split it.
Oh.
But still, we all willingly did.
That's a lot of money, huh? Like, young comics.
Teeth. And that's 10 years ago.
I know comics that would have retired after that.
No, but it's interesting. I mean, and our expenses were limited because we didn't do any radio. We didn't buy any ads. It was all email, word of mouth. You know, just we were out there just like, you know, because we were out there. Remember when we were touring, Maz and I had this system. He would be up, you know, like the Matrix on his computer doing his email blasts. I'd show up in the city like a week early and we'd budget, you know, hotel room every night, expenses, and I'd go out and do all the, you know, groundwork, like just all the, like, passing out flyers, shaking hands, kissing babies, going into local businesses, you know, getting the community involved and going to the people at the top of the pyramid. Really, like, not to the scale of what Kevin Hart did, but, you know, he had that, you know, Joe Coy, a lot of these comics have that, like, go out, talk to the people in the community, they'll bring all the fans. That's kind of how, you know, how it worked. And then ended up, you know, taking off. We went to the Middle East. We sold out 20,000 seats in 1 month in like 5 countries. And we did a whole tour there and shot that. So it was a cool, you know, time capsule in my life, you know, to try to go back and repeat that. I don't know. I know you do, when you did Last Comic Standing, Roy Wood Jr. said you guys had a blast on the bus. You guys were going around America on that bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to hear about that because I only heard his stories.
Oh, man, it was awesome.
Because I was asking him, like, what was – because you had won Last Comic Standing.
Yeah, I won Last Comic Standing, and I was getting paid more than them every night and going and up last.
And you got the best room on the bus, right?
No, there was no room in the bus. Whoever got the room first.
Oh, is that how it worked?
But you know what? when we were on the tour, everything was tight, you know, except that, you know, like, the guy who feels like he lost, the guy next to me, Tommy John again, he kept going over. Right. Like, he would do 15, he would do 25, 26, and then he kept going over, like, trying to, like, what you, I'm like, and me as a comic, I'm like,
I won.
Why are you trying to go over? Why are you trying to win over the crowd? I already won the electoral vote.
White privilege.
Though. I won I am the people's champion. And I just let him, you know, I could have talked shit, you know, and say, hey, asshole, stop going over your time. But I already got the money.
Yeah.
I already got the cash,
right.
The prestige.
All that shit.
You know, he kept going over. He was late to the bus, like 40 minutes late, 35 minutes late. I was like, hey, let's leave.
Yeah.
You know, we could leave without him.
Right.
You know, but then we waited, you know, all this stuff, you know, was going on.
Let's leave.
Going over, you know, and then, like, I was high most of the time, bro. Everywhere I went, Flint, Michigan, somebody showed up, gave me a 1/4 ounce of weed. I mean, these are rednecks, bro, who just showed up to see me.
That's funny.
Like, they showed up, these guys, bro, that I normally, if I would have saw them on TV, I'd say, man, me and these guys can never be friends.
Yeah. Bro, I have a joke that I do, a marijuana joke that I do, and, like, probably 99.9% of the time after the show, somebody always comes up to me and hands me a bag of weed or a joint or something. It's actually really cool, because you don't need to find a drug dealer in every city.
After a while, before, bro, I used to switch the joke to coke. I'm so glad that I was not partying, I met Ahmed, because, man, if I was on that bus, of course I would have made a stink. Hey, cocksucker, stop going over.
Right.
Fucking my dealer left, dog.
Right.
Or stuff like that, you know. And I just did my thing, man. I got over we had 85 cities.
I heard.
85 cities.
Big ass tour, dude.
And oh, man, I was just happy to be. It was my first time actually on a tour with a bus. It was my first time, like, traveling every night, getting up and going somewhere. I lost a lot of stuff, man.
Did you guys have breaks?
No breaks.
You guys hit 85 cities back to back?
We took a break for Christmas, a week off, this and that.
Because you were also doing a little bit of shows in between your own shows, right?
Like, it was funny, man. Like, when we were in Philadelphia, we were at a place called Allentown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was all white people, right? All white people. And I'm thinking, like, oh, no. You know, I learned a lot in this tour. You know, I learned, like, what joke not to say, what not to do. And then I remember Tommy went over right there at that show. Like, he went over, like, he was doing 15. He did 27. And then when I went up on stage and I looked at the audience, I see why. I don't know why. I said I see why he went over. Again, you know, because he was hurt, man.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the front row, there were 5 white old people, and they had Team Felipe shirts. I mean, 5 old white people, Team Felipe people. And this guy right here, beloved comedian from Bob and Tom. You know, he was a Bob Tom favorite, bro.
Right.
I'm not a Bob Tom favorite.
He was a favorite.
Hey, man, you know, I won the electoral vote, bro.
Out from under his feet.
I swooped under, bro, and I came out of nowhere.
You did actually come out. No, the comedy.
You knew me.
The comedy world knew you.
Yeah.
But America didn't.
America didn't know
me. Last Comic Standing, man, that's a great. I think if you can get on a platform like that and really showcase your talent
and have experience.
And have experience behind it, not just come out and think you're funny because you're funny at the office or whatever. No, there's always those guys who think they're funny in front of their friends and they try to do it.
I'm glad that they didn't have to be like a guy who won Last Comic Standing. They didn't have to prove myself to everybody.
Right.
Well, because. Well, he wasn't funny, right. but people at the comedy store, they knew, everybody from the Southwest America knew who Felipe was.
Yeah.
But after, man, I felt like we, like, when I would go to Arizona, like, when I went, which is the best part of the tour, man, because we would go to different places where there wasn't, like, that many Mexicans, you know, anywhere, but we finally hit places where there were Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we hit Corpus Christi, Texas.
Nuts. It was over.
It was over, bro. Those guys had to pack up their merch and leave. For real, Tommy John again had to, he just closed, he borrowed tape from somebody to close his box because nobody was buying CDs, bro. There was one line and it was just for me. And then Roy Wood looked at Tommy and goes, yeah, man, yeah, he won.
I love Roy.
There was a line around the block, man. And I don't know, my mouth hurt from smiling, bro. And I just looked over again. Okay, I guess I won, huh?
I got the electoral vote.
I want the electoral vote, bro.
Dude, I went on tour with Roy Wood. We did the Sullivan and Son tour with Steve Byrne and Owen Benjamin. So it's Owen, tall white guy, 6'7" white guy. Steve, half Asian, half white. Myself, Arab. Roy, black. We're going, no tour manager, no nothing. Just going in our car around America. Pulled up in Houston. This girl came up to me after the show. She's like, how come you guys don't have security or tour manager or whatever? You know, you're in Houston. Somebody, you know, you'll get held up here. And I was like, no, we're good. We got a black guy with us. You know, we got Roy Wood Jr. with us. I think whenever you have a black person with you, people are just a little bit hesitant to want to approach you.
Back off and shit?
Yeah.
Back off.
If you got an Arab and a black guy, then it's just like, hey, all right, back off. Double trouble. Lethal weapon.
Roy Woods could handle his liquor, by the way.
He's a monster comedian, too, man. That guy, I'm telling you, I've watched a lot of comedy, and he is a craftsman, the way he does it, you know, and the polarity in his voice and the octaves, and he's got this little bit of a, not to relate him to Bill Cosby, but he's got that voice.
Sweet rhythm, yeah.
Yeah, rhythm and stuff. And, yeah, man, he's a monster, dude. He spoke really highly of you.
Roy could just stand up there and talk, you know. Me, I gotta be whimsical, bro. I gotta make faces at you. I gotta poke my eyeball at you.
You gotta poke your ears.
My
out.
Eyes gotta be the part like, man, when you started stand up, were all the crazy guys still there, like Sam Kinison, all the guys? Or they're all dead.
Nah, thanks for. I don't know why you put me in that category.
My bad.
I'm not that old.
My bad. You started with,
I'm not that old.
I mean, we talking about, man. When I was there, Chewy was gone.
When I got there, okay, Chewy was there. When I got to the comedies, actually, I started doing it with you, but when I got to the comedy store, it was like Joe Rogan, Eddie Griffin, Charles Fleischer. Like that.
At the end, huh?
It was like when they were, all those sort of, but then Rogan, he left for 15 years and then came back, and then Eddie Griffin got kind of phased out of there, and then this new crew kind of came in. It was like me, Brett Ernst, Sebastian Maniscalco, Maz Jobrani, Sam Tripoli,
Mike Young,
like that, you know, the generation. And then we had love there.
And Boom Shakalaka.
Boom Shakalaka. The Comedy Store, that's an insane asylum, that place.
Isn't it, man?
I don't perform there. I don't perform there anymore. I had to, I had a little bit of a phasing out with the managers. They were like...
The new manager or the old ones?
The new ones. When, they had a changing of the guards, the booking. They were like, yeah.
No more Tommy?
No more Tommy.
Tommy was cool with me.
Tommy was great to me.
It's funny, like, everybody talks bad about him, but...
Yeah, there's all those horror stories. There, huh?
He was good to me.
I would shake his hand, and he was like, Philippe, you want to go up right now? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got tired. The politics got weird. Like, the inmates started running the joint. No, seriously. I literally had the manager of the comedy store say to me, you're not as relevant as you used to be, which was funny because I was in GQ magazine and Playboy magazine right at the same week he was saying that shit. It was like, go to the newsstand, pick up the fucking papers, guy. Where's your head at?
Relevant to his
and flavor. He was kind of manny. Oh, you knew you have to write a new special, and he was kind of. I was like, you're not my manager, and you don't even know what I'm doing in my career. And then he said, I've been instructed by comics to not book you.
God damn.
I said, are you fucking kidding me? He said, nope. I said, who was it? Can't tell you. And I was like, all right. Then it just got dirty. Then I felt the dirt, you know, at the place. And that's when I moved to New York like last September. And I've been having a blast in New York because none of that shit exists in New York. If you're funny, you're funny. And then you go to another spot. And then you go to another spot. People don't get caught up in the comedy politics, I think, in New York like they do here in LA. Don't you think? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think that a lot of people hang out like vultures, dude. That's why it's like that, you know?
Well, there's only three clubs, so that's all you can do. But in New York, you can go, you know, the Comedy Cellar, I think, is the hottest club there to even hang out in. They have good food, nice restaurant, little bar area. But there's literally, you know, dozens and dozens of clubs around New York City. So you don't have time to linger around one place all night.
Right.
A lot of lingerers in LA.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the problem, man. Lingerers. Like, a lot of sad faces in LA. For real, like, yeah, you're right. a lot of comedians who should be somewhere doing a spot want to watch another comedian perform and then give him a dirty look when he gets off.
Yeah.
Go to a spot, cocksucker.
That's a weird little trip.
I don't have the sad faces.
When I couldn't get spots, I would just go start a room.
Yes.
Remember Dublin's?
Dublin's.
You guys started
that. Was
that
your room?
Yeah, me and Jay Davis.
Wow, that
was people think it was Jay's room because Jay was the front man of it. But, and I was booking the room for the first 2 years, and then it started getting really creepy. Comics were calling me in the middle of the night. I'd have comics call me up and say, hey, man, I need to get laid tonight.
God damn.
I get out? I swear to God, I need to get laid tonight.
Dude, fools that didn't even go up got laid over there.
I need to get laid.
Mike Young.
I need to get laid. Can I go up tonight and just do 5 minutes? I'll even do a tight three. Because if you went up at Dublin's and you killed, you got laid.
He's not lying. I did a spot and I got a hug. For us, I think like I went up like maybe three times. And I remember the first time I went up, I was just finished just writing that joke, Life Raft, and some other joke. And I remember Brett Ernst came up to me and he goes, man, Sam Tripoli. He goes, man, you better not leave, bro. You were like a rock star up there. You stick around. So I waited. Then some drunk ass chick was outside. Hey! So I went over there, bro, trying to get a kiss. We got a hug. It was like a goodbye kiss.
Fuck, it's a good hug.
Every comic, dude.
She was hot.
Every comic that performed there and killed got laid.
Even Joe Diaz. Remember Joe Diaz? I was getting a blowjob
downstairs.
I was going through her purse. She said, I gotta go to the parking meter. And I fucking stole her, a scene off her fucking purse and took off. Went to Dante's house.
That's a good impression.
Was it a better one? What are you doing, bro?
You know, I ain't got nothing to say. That's a good impression, Felipe Esparza. I'm a little tired today. But anyway, I'm a little fucking wheezy, you know, the cats and shit, the little daughter. But we're going to leave it like that. But I was going to ask you.
Because the calm Joey, I do the excited one.
I was going to ask you, because you know when everybody does a Joe Diaz impression, it's usually the hyped up one. Slow it down a bit.
Yeah.
Talk to me like a fucking human.
Yeah.
Up and up and down like a fucking
nigger. I know that guy.
But you had a show called Rock Comedy at the Comedy Store before that, right?
What happened? So we did. Okay, so
Everybody was showing up in the rock.
So
world.
Dublin's and the comedies, not Dublin's, the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store weren't doing that well.
Hell no.
Yeah, that's when it was showing
and then,
empty.
And then we started this room at Dublin's, and we did it for 4 years straight, sold out every Tuesday. You know, hot chicks, celebrities.
Dane Cook kind of got famous.
That's where Dane Cook.
Yeah, Dane Cook, Alonzo Bowden too.
Right, dude.
Dane Cook will. And Alonzo Bowden, right? Alonzo Bowden would close the show every night and do like this jazz set. He'd sit down and just talk to the audience, like, you know, this old wise black man. And people would just go nuts for him. But Dane Cook.
On a stool.
Dane, like, he was preaching, like, you know. And then
you have Mongols at that show, bro.
And then Dane Cook came in about 2 years in, and he just blew the hell up in that room, and he became like the rock star quarterback. And he was, he'll say to this day, that room was the last time comedy was innocent for me, because after that he did stadiums. He like went all over he became, you know, he had a lot of family stuff happening and whatever, and personal shit and people in Hollywood. But he said Dublin's, man, that was when comedy was innocent for me. That was the last time I remember comedy being innocent. I thought that was cool because it did have an innocence to it in itself, because it was a standalone room. And then Pauly Shore came in one night with like five like really hot like, you know, dirty, like playmates.
We stole them from him.
And he goes, and he was like, hey, bud, what's up, buddy? And he's like, this is a great room. And, you know, kind of asked us about it. And we said, you want to go up on stage? Sure. He went up on stage. He killed because everybody is, you know, Pauly Shore, the Weezer. And then he came up to us after and he's like, hey, you guys want to bring this show over to my mom's club, the Comedy Store? So we started doing Thursdays over there. We called it Rock Comedy. And we had rock and roll, like DJ, you know, play rock and roll music in between. And we took the best of the best from Dublin's and put them up on that stage. And I would just throw myself up in the lineup. And that's how I got passed at the Comedy Store. Mitzi Shore saw me one night. Me, Brett Ernst, and Sam Tripoli all got passed the same night because she was in the room watching the show.
Sweet.
And she came up to me afterward and she said, hey, you're real funny. You're adorable too. Are you Arabic?
Damn.
I said, I'm Egyptian. She goes, oh, really? You know, we used to be your slaves.
I swear to God. Let me bend
over. And then she walked away. She walked away, and then they called me the next day. They're like, she likes you. She passed you.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
The good old days.
That's funny, man, when, you know, because actors of comedy, you know, those fools, Maz, this guy, Ahmed Ahmed, and the other dude, I forgot his name. What was the other guy?
Me too.
Yeah, I forgot his name. Well, the other guy, bro. It's like, then you guys were the first, right? So you're the first, so then you have, like, newer Arabs coming in. You know, then it turns into, like, Latinos.
A lot of them.
Like,
no.
Saturated.
No,
they come in and go, hey, man, I do the alternative Arab comedy now. Hey.
Right.
You ever get that? Because yep. We got Latinos, too, man. You know, I don't do beaner jokes, bro. You're a fucking beaner, dog. Yeah. You the and remixes? I are going to get pulled over for the same shit, dog.
We look alike.
Like, Paul Rodriguez would tell me, you know, people would get on my case because I was throwing tortillas at the time. But who else was? I was the only one.
20 years later. For
you know, when did you stop? Paul, when did you stop throwing tortillas? He said he was doing some TV telethon, and he threw a tortilla, and it hit the cameraman, bro. And one of them hit the camera, and it was blocking the thing.
That's in the scene of
I would thought that like he would stop doing it because it was hacky. Eh?
That's like an SNL sketch.
But he invented it, and there was another comic that was doing like 3 years later, dog.
Fernando
like,
Verduzco.
What the fuck, dude?
He was throwing tortillas, and then Paul Rodriguez walked to the laugh back. Hey, I was doing that shit in 79.
Yeah, dude. I was like, damn.
Whatever happened with, I don't know if you guys like are in touch with him or friends, but Mencia.
He's around. Yeah, all the clubs where, you know, Felipe does, he's always, you know, fucking selling out 2 weeks in a row and shit, all that shit. He's around. He did Joey Diaz's podcast, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, dude, probably about like 2 months ago.
You said, what did he say, would shoot everybody?
Yeah, he was thinking about going to the Comedy Store and shooting everybody.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm glad I'm not working there anymore.
Right? Yeah, but that's it. That's all I know.
With a hat gun.
Come out with the little flag that says bang.
Yeah, man.
Crazy, huh?
He thought he was all fresh. Huh? Speaking of fresh, today's episode is sponsored by HelloFresh, a farm-to-box company that sends you all the fresh ingredients and the recipes you need to create healthy, satisfying meals. They currently offer a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. You can order 3 to 5 meals per week designed for 2 to 4 people. Rodrigo had it. He's all happy. Yeah, right. Most recipes take just 30 minutes to prepare. Man, because, man, you don't want to wait an hour to eat your tortillas, bro.
Right?
Who wants to wait more than 30 minutes? People want to eat it now. Most recipes do take 30 minutes to prepare, but HelloFresh is now offering light summer meals that has just introduced breakfast. They just introduced breakfast options, bro.
Really?
Get a breakfast to go. The cost breaks down to less than 10 per meal. Man, that's cheap. So that's been $12 on breakfast sometimes.
$10 a meal?
Yeah. The freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantity needed, so there's no food waste, man. Because you know, man, we waste food. And HelloFresh delivers the food to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box for free. We had this meal service for 1 week. We chose the veggie box, and my favorite was the Tex-Mex risotto. So good. And everything was on our porch waiting for us, and we got home. I was surprised, too, that everyone was waiting for our porch. Usually somebody will steal it, you know, because there's food they left it behind. All the ingredients for each meal in a separate little box. So easy. So easy when you don't want to think about what to make for dinner. You don't have to go to the store for any missing ingredients. That always happens to me, man. I go home and I buy cereal and I forget to get milk. Our listeners, because you're a What's Up Food podcast listeners, we're going to give you $30 off the first week.
Right?
Of HelloFresh by going to HelloFresh.com and enter promo code FOOL30. That's HelloFresh.com and use promo code FOOL30. Yeah, man. I don't know what the news is talking about. 1,000 jobs are hired for retail. Retail's dead. People are delivering food now.
Yeah, oh, man. Amazon.
Amazon's delivering food. Whole Foods was sold to Amazon.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff has changed. When Amanda May started stand-up, and when I started stand-up, we were at the Comedy Store. I think the only place that delivered food was Pink Dot, huh?
Yep. Right down the street. Domino's, maybe.
Hey, wasn't it fun, man? Like you said before, before now, you know, before you know where to go, before you knew where you were going, before you knew where to take your comedy or your fucking comedy, where was it gonna go? The whole innocence of not knowing where it was gonna go, it was so fun, huh?
Yeah, that was the best part of it.
Wasn't it?
Not knowing the journey, and then you arrive, and you're like, wow, I got here. You know,
We're not happy. We're happy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do anything spectacular, but I did some cool things. It's funny. I actually wrote in my journal things I wanted to accomplish as a comedian, and I think I did most of them, you know? So it's interesting what you kind of put out there and where you land. Sometimes it's not, you don't land where you think you're going to land. Like, I thought I was going to be an American, you know? Like, I am American, but, you know, a lot of people have classified. Like, I'll do, like, you probably get a lot of these Latin shows or fests or whatever. Like, I'm doing this festival called the Halal Fest, where it's just like, you know, Muslim comedians. And it's nice to do that for the community, but I don't want to be locked in as the Muslim comedian. Or the
pigeonholed?
Yeah, or the Arab comedian, you know what I mean? Like, I like to, that's what I'm trying to do more and more is just outreach into just cross-cultural, you know, communities. It can get really pigeonholy, you know, I think.
I bet, yeah.
Do you get, like, when they're looking for a Middle Eastern comedian, it doesn't matter, Arab, Persian, whatever. Do you ever feel like they got that motherfucker? You're like, no, honestly, I always feel that too. You know, like they got that motherfucker. I've been doing comedy 20 years, right? You know, but then again, they start breaking it down. Well, I didn't graduate from high school. I didn't graduate from college. Am I really supposed to be speaking to these kids?
Right.
You know,
I always get, hey, you know, how much would it cost to bring you for this gig? And then I quote them, okay, great, we'll get back to you. That sounds great. And then, you know, they'll email me back or I'll see the post on Facebook that they booked somebody else.
Yeah, but we got Martin Amini.
No, but I'm always curious, like, you know what the deal breaker is? That they always undercut my fee.
Oh, of course.
So they'll say, oh, we got him for this much instead of that much. I'm like, well, then you're going to get that much comedy.
Oh, man, I'll tell you a story right now.
I'll tell
you a story about a guy who hired another comedian. I want to say the name because, you know, he said, this guy goes, hey, I want to hire, for example, I want to hire Amir Ahmed. You know, I got $25,000. You think he'll do it? Oh, let me ask him. Ahmed, we got this gig for $5,000. We'll fly you out to Hawaii, round trip with a hotel. And if you want to bring an extra person, go ahead.
It's coming out of your $5,000.
So you say, yeah. You say, yeah. I'll do it. I'd love to do it. Then the other guy cuts in and takes 20 just because he got the phone call.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way it works. You kind of get upset because you were happy with the $5,000.
Right.
But
you didn't know about the other.
No. Time. But does it happen a lot? Have you ever felt that?
All the time.
You laugh hard. Like it happened.
No, because I'm just like, oh, I so fucking relate to this. You know, it happens all the time, especially in the Middle East. You know, I hate to say it. There's a couple legit promoters that I work out there with, but a lot of them do exactly that. They go to the sponsor. They get $100,000 from the sponsor. They give the artist 10 or whatever. And they say, no, we have expenses. There's always expenses, like hidden expenses.
Lights and a microphone.
Yeah, lights and a microphone. Really? We're not a band. There's no sound check.
Mad production.
Know. Yeah. There's no. You know, flames and shit like that. And pyrotechnics. It's a mic and a stand and some lights, and you put some chairs up. You know, what is it? $20,000 to do that? Where's the rest? So, yeah, man, I've probably been, you know, screwed over tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 over the course of my career.
Crazy,
and sometimes, you know, they agree to pay you a certain amount, and then you go do the gig, you know, and they give you a deposit, and they say, as soon as you're done with the set, you get a check or the wire for the balance, and then they always say, we didn't sell enough tickets or something happened. And then they don't pay you. And the great thing about the Middle East, not the great thing, the screwed up thing is they always say, you know, well, you know, my lawyer will be contacting you. Fuck you, sue me. What are you going to sue me in Egypt? You're going to sue me in Saudi Arabia? You're going to sue me in these? I dare you to hire a lawyer to fly over here and try and sue me. You're going to spend more money than you're going to make, you know, make back. So you just kind of got to wash your hands from it, you know, and say, well, hopefully I don't do that next time.
Damn, bro. That sucks to be
Get all your money up front. If you're going to leave the country to do a gig, make sure all the money is up front, you know, or make sure you have some sort of, especially when you do overseas gigs. That's the worst. You go overseas and you don't get the money. You're like, man, I flew all the way across the world for this shit.
Damn.
Didn't even get a deposit.
Done a couple of those, too.
I did before I was at one last comic, I did a show for some guy. He paid me well. Then the second time, I offered a deposit, right? Because I didn't trust his ass because he barely counted the money the first time. You know? He was paying me in tears. So he wanted me to do a second show the next year. I said, all right, man, you sent me $500. Up front, and then when we do the gig, you just pay me the two. It was $700, right? So he didn't send the $500, right? I never got the $500. And then the show gets moved. A week before the show gets moved. Then he wants me to do the next show the following month. And I told him, nah, man, you stole me $500, bro, for the other gig you canceled. You never sent me the deposit. But you never did the show. So? The deal was, I get the $500. It's up to you to put up the show.
Right.
So if you don't pay me $1,000 up front now, I'm not going to do that show. So I basically told him no.
It's a rub. Sometimes you got to burn a bridge. So, you know Angelo Sarukis?
Yes.
He said he gave me the greatest line ever. We were talking about burning bridges in Hollywood and in our business. And he said, man, if you're going to burn a bridge, make sure you walk across it first, bro.
That's good advice,
Tom. And I'm always like, well, I walked across that motherfucker 1,000 times, so I don't need to do it again.
Come on, bro.
Work with me, dog.
Angelo Sarukis is he's a comedian from Toronto. And that fool, you know, some people read tarot cards. Some people read palms. This fool reads coffee grounds.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's Greek. He's Greek from Canada. He grew up with Russell Peters. Him and Russell are best friends.
Oh, damn.
I've been all over the world with Angelo. I'd made a documentary that, not to shamelessly plug it, but...
plug it, bro.
Did a documentary called Just Like Us. It's on Netflix right now. And I took 10 American comics to Dubai, Lebanon, Egypt, and Saudi. So it was like Whitney Cummings, Sebastian Maniscalco, Maz Jobrani, Tommy Davidson is in it, Omid Djalili. But Angelo was in it. And we took him to Egypt and... he was fascinated by Egypt because he was like, man, I can't believe this, bro. There's the pyramids. And then over there, there's like Pizza Hut. I want to climb the pyramids, but I really want pizza. And we put him on this camel. And, you know, he's like well over 400 pounds, I think.
The big dude.
Yeah, we put him on this camel, bro. And the camel was like. And then the camel barely got up and we were all clapping. We thought the camel was going to
snap a knee.
And then he said, this is like an episode of Mythbusters.
Damn, the camel took a little knee.
The straw didn't break the camel's back.
I almost gave him a little salute.
He's a funny dude, man. He's a great comic to tour with because he likes to, a lot of comedians like to sit in their hotel rooms all day and battle depression and watch. Watch. No, I've done it. You're watching like Dateline, eating
watching
like
Fox News getting pissed off.
Yeah, eating microwavable food from the lobby. And then I'm just, Angelo's always like, come on, man, let's go walk around. He likes to go walk around and see
and
the
do
city
shit? Hell yeah,
and do shit. Some comics don't like to do that. Do you like to do that?
I like to do shit if there's shit to do.
To do, yeah, that's true.
Like when I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I was staying at the best part of Chattanooga, the choo-choo trains. There was nothing else to see, right?
Nothing to see, yeah. I always just go to the movie. Where, in Chattanooga?
Yeah.
Or the mall.
I always say go see a movie during the afternoon. Just kill 2-3 hours that way, especially if you're in a city. I was in Cincinnati. You know Gary Cannon?
No.
He has a podcast.
With Steve Byrne, right?
Yeah. It's called Gentleman's Mojo, or I think, whatever. But we were in Cincinnati, man, and he wanted to go to a strip club. So we went to the strip club that was the size of this room.
Damn. And, VIP, VIP.
And there was one girl at the on the pole, like a little bit away from us. And he waved a dollar. He's like, hey, can you come over here so I can? And she goes, can you throw it over here? I have a bum knee. They're like, you got a bum knee? Though. Yeah, disabled strippers in Cincinnati.
Damn. Shoot on a pogo stick. That's sad, huh?
Stripper on the crutch.
She wanted that dollar. It's 20. You come get it. You have any dates coming up, bro? You want to plug?
Yeah, man. I'm going to Hawaii on Roseanne Barr has this comedy summer series, I guess.
Oh, cool.
So it's in Honolulu. I'm doing the Blue Note in Honolulu on July 19th. And then I'm doing Maui. Jay Davis has a room in Maui now at the Dirty Monkey in Lahaina. I'll be there July 13th or 14th. And then you can go on my website. It's ahmedahmed.com. And all my dates are up there. Anybody listening in China? I'll be in China in October.
In Chinese.
Hey-ho. Meow.
They have a comedy club, a lot of comedy club in Hong Kong.
Yeah, Kung
right?
Fu comedy I'm doing. Have you done that
Never.
Tour? Have you done that gig? Every time I tell somebody, they're like, who books that? You ever hear that? Comics always say that. Who books that?
Look at that email.
Ruben Paul? Yeah. Yeah. It'll be my first time. And I'm doing Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and Singapore. So that'll be fun. And then we're doing a potential, we're planning an Axis of Evil reunion tour. So if you're listening in the Middle East, it'll probably start in the Middle East. You got some Kuwaiti listeners? Kuwait a minute. Kuwait's funny. I went with Maz to Kuwait.
Rich?
The first time. Yeah, man. They're just...
They have money over there, huh?
Yeah, it's oil money, but there's not much to do in Kuwait. But it was also their first comedy show. So the promoter said, okay, guys, this is 10 years ago. Okay, guys, here's the deal. You cannot talk about sex, drugs, religion, or politics.
Good night.
Good night. So we're like, all right, whatever. Maz raises his hand. He's like, I do a joke where I say fuck one time. Is that okay? And the promoter's like, man, you're putting me in a bad place. So
strict over there.
And then I'm like, I have like 46 fucks, just so you know. And he goes, okay, here is the deal. Each of you can have 2 fucks. We're like, 2? Like, when we're negotiating profanity. At a fucking comic
there's show. A clean comic there you could borrow the 2 fucks from?
And then we're driving to the show, and the guy's phone rings. Hello? Yes, I'm with the Axis of Evil comedy guys right now. We're on our way to the show. I told them they can have 2. What do you mean? I just told them they can have... Okay, fine. Khalas, bye. Guys, no fucks.
Damn.
So it was like, I've never done that before. I've never been in a situation where... Sometimes you'll do like certain gigs where the person says, hey, there's children in the room, or keep it clean, or whatever. You know, there's the clean set. But in the Middle East, they're just like, I'm just like... I can't say this, can't say that. You can, I mean, yeah, it's changed. The first 10 years ago, I got banned from Dubai for a year.
Damn.
We actually talk about it in my documentary, but I did a joke, not even a joke, it was an observation about a nightclub and a mosque right across the street from each other in Dubai. So we parked at this mosque and we were walking across the street to the nightclub. So it was like 8 o'clock, you hear the Allah, and then you hear so I was like, should we pray? Should we dance? You know? And it ended up on our Axis of Evil special on Comedy Central and then eventually on YouTube, and somebody like over there saw it and they banned me for a year because they said I was insulting Islam and
damn. Strict over there, huh?
Yo, black people problems, bro. I'm black, technically, North African.
That's crazy, huh? You can't say fucks. Well, oh, women are sitting on one side
in Saudi, it was like that, some of the shows. The other joke I did, they have the only 7-star hotel in the whole wide world. In Dubai, it's shaped as a sailboat. It's like an architectural phenomenon. And I was like, how did it get 7 stars? And I said, the Emir... You know, said, you know, I give it 7 stars. It's my hotel. I'll give it 11 if I want, you know? So it got a laugh, but it was more like not making fun of him. It was more like, this guy's that powerful, he can do that. And then, boom, they throw the hammer down on me. You're insulting our leader, and he's the leader of our city. And I love Dubai, you know, but it can have a little bit of hypocrisy going on in that sense where, you know, there's a lot of Western stuff happening there, you know? Sort of in-your-face prostitution, and there's a
they
big nightclub scene. No, it feeds the, you know, part of the economy in some way. You know, businessmen coming in from all over the world. It's the biggest business. But then, you know, if you get caught with, like, a little bag of coke, it's 15 years in prison. Not that I would do that or bring
might
it
be
in
the
there.
Best.
Might be the best coke you've ever had.
I was thinking if I were to go there, do I have relationship jokes I could do?
Yeah.
To make them up, huh? You ever bring wife to your house and she was not worth 5 cows? You say, hey, she not worth 5 cows?
Bro, they have a Muslim dating app. Have you seen, I swear to God.
Is it like that?
It's called Muslim Single, I think, or Muslim Singles. And I'm like,
You don't have to die lonely. You can have that, bro.
Dude, that's fucking hilarious.
It's yours, dog.
It's a funny app because it's cool because all the people in the community get to interact. But I'm like, you don't even know what any of the women look like. You know, it's like, hi, I'm Nadia. I like long walks on the beach, a falafel, and an occasional hot tea. And you're like, hey, Nadia, you have beautiful eyes. You know, can you show me the rest of your face? Sure, no problem. Wow, full frontal nose.
My name is Honey. I like to take long walks behind my man.
That's not funny.
I like to drive, just kidding. It might kill my ovaries. Remember that? Yeah. That's crazy when they said they're about to allow women to drive in Saudi Arabia, but then somebody passed alternate fake news over there and said that it might hurt your ovaries if a woman drives.
Right. Damn. They'll say anything to keep women from driving.
And when I say it, I mean it. There was this comedian, I don't know if the comedian, this Arab comedian, he wrote a song that went viral because he's Muslim. And he took the song from Don't Worry, that Bob Marley song.
Be happy.
No woman, no.
No cry, yeah.
But he's this guy wrote, I remember when you used to sit in the back seat of my car. No woman, no drive. No woman, no drive.
That little play on it?
Yeah, it was funny, man.
The Middle East, man. You never done the Middle East,
never,
right?
Never, man. Just, man, you guys, just the Midwest. Bad enough.
That's it, right?
Just as conservative.
You guys would kill over there, I swear. I think you do a great. We should bring you over there. They were trying to talk to you. I told you this tour manager was trying to get a hold of you to do Southeast Asia and the Middle East. And
$5,000, you keep 20. What?
Hey,
we're back, cocksucker.
What's up, fool?
What's up, fool? You did the Comic Without Borders, right, with Russell?
I did, yeah. Russell hosted that. It was funny because, you know, Scott Montoya, obviously. Yeah. So Scott used to manage me, and then we stopped working together.
He was
together.
Taking 80%.
89.
I love Scott. Scott just, you know, he was working over at this place called The Collective, I think. And he, you know, he's a great producer. I think managing talent was not probably something he enjoyed doing. And also under the circumstances he had over them, I'm being really PC right now. But anyway, he came back and was producing all these Showtime specials, Comics Without Borders and stuff. And I was touring.
I did a special.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, we were on the same thing. And I was touring with Russell Peters in Australia. I didn't even know who Russell was back then. And Scott called me up. He was managing me at the time. And he said, do you think Russell would host these? Or no, he said, well, we're trying to get Wilmer Valderrama, I think was the guy from 70's Show.
Yeah.
Is that his name? Wilmer?
Wilmer.
And he said, you know, he doesn't want to do it. Or some weird political thing that happened. Do you know anybody that might want to do it? Like a celebrity. Like he was trying to lean toward Vince. He wanted me to ask Vince. I said, I know for sure Vince wouldn't do this. I said, what about Russell Peters? I'm standing right next to him in the Sydney airport. And he's like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. Ask him. I just leaned over and I said, would you be interested in doing that? And he said, you know, sure. I think he had a producer fee or whatever, EP. And then Clayton, his brother, did the deal. But that's how that happened. I didn't get my percentage. I didn't get my $20,000.
Sent the kite.
But yeah, Russell's fun to work with, man. Russell took me to Australia and
sold
like
out.
Bro, he sold 30,000 tickets and he was just climbing back then.
This is in
five cities. So we did Perth, Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. And you know, we were calling him Elvis Parsley. That guy, man, he's just like, he was getting popped left and right. Asian, Indians, all over him. And I was just like, who is this guy? I'd never met him. He asked me to go on tour with him. I never even met him. He said, yeah, I saw your Axis of Evil thing, and I'm going on tour. I'm looking for a cool comic to bring with me. And I was like, I said, why me? He said, I heard you like women. I said, yeah, I think so. He said, so do I.
It was back then when I didn't like women, bro.
Yeah. You know, he basically was like, you know, I need a good wingman. Just stay out of my way. kind of thing.
Hell yeah.
And I did. I was, you know, and he treated us nicely. You know, Ray, Shake, his bodyguards, and we went all over, man. And Russell does it in style, bro. You know, first, everything's first class. Always picking up me, buying people expensive watches and shit.
I had one.
You got a watch?
Yeah, I got a watch.
I got a watch. I got a tag watch. What'd you get?
Me too.
Now he's spending like $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 on these watches, you know, like, and just throwing, giving them away like candy. But when you're making $21 million a year, damn it, I guess you can do that.
Be spitting out those Benjamins.
I had to tag my sponsor.
You know what?
Tag my sponsor, you know, with a watch. No, because I follow this page, Ahmed, where this
I like guy, when you say my name both times. Most people don't do that. They always just say Ahmed.
Ahmed is like a first name. Yeah. I mean, there was like, there's this page I followed, right? Because I was, you know, me, you know, like you said, man, I was in my hotel room fighting depression. Everybody was out at the mall. I didn't want to go, too hot. So, you know, just went through Instagram, following pages, investigating stuff. And I hit up on a page called Tag the Sponsor. Because I used to follow these chicks, right? It says these hot models. And they go to, I was tripping out because they like going to the same places.
Dubai?
The last woman like to go. Uh-huh. Her best places to be are New York, Miami, Dubai. Right. And like, what the fuck is the attraction to the Dubai shit, right? Then I started hashtagging and I said, then I want to tag the sponsor. Then they hashtag this guy pretending to be like this rich Arab guy, right? And he was taunting this girl. So what do? Because you ever had
little hummus bath?
Hummus bath. I didn't know what that was, right? I did not know what that was. I thought, are they stuffing hummus in her ass? But I didn't know that. But now, bro, they're dumping shits on these chicks, right? Because these chicks, like this one model, she's hot. She posted a photo with her and getting off a plane in Dubai, first class in Dubai, shopping in Dubai. And I'm thinking, this bitch does not sell enough of these shitty drinks that she promotes to go to Dubai two times a year.
There's so many women in Dubai that are taken care of.
Right.
And they have sweet-ass villas on the Palm Islands. They get
mad money.
Rolls Royce. You know, they get all the perks they need, and they don't have any sort of emotional connection with the guy who's funding the whole party.
He's married somewhere happy, huh? This
probably
chick is living somewhere.
Well, probably with a few people. You know, some of these guys have, you know, I know guys in the Middle East who roll, you know, they got like, you know, 6-7 women always, just entourage, you know, Playboy.
Yeah, man, I have to look up the king of Saudi Arabia, bro. This guy is so rich that he has, his family is rich, but he built a prison just to lock up family members who are fucking up. Like, if you're a family member that hasn't paid his fucking taxes, he'll lock you up in that nice prison, bro, till you fucking do your time.
You get a pet tiger. Bro, you ever done that gig in Seychelles? It's Seychelles is this little tiny island off the coast of West Africa, and I went with Adam Hunter one time.
It's a little island off Africa, very small, right? Yeah. Lunel was taking photos.
Yep.
That place is like a fucking paradise.
So there's a guy, a prince who built a resort right next to the Four Seasons, right? And it's like his own little like built-in paradise, and he flies in escorts, like 50 of them. Like a couple times a month or whatever, and like 5 or 6 gay guys, and you fly into Seychelles, you go through Dubai, you fly into Seychelles, you get picked up, they check you into the hotel, they give you a temporary phone and like a pager, the booker, and he says, hey, we're gonna call you at 6 o'clock or whatever, be ready, a golf cart's gonna come pick you up, we're gonna take you to the gig, you're gonna do the gig, you can't talk to the audience, you can't meet the audience afterward, don't look at the prince in the eyes, all this crazy shit, and then you gotta leave, you can't interact with the audience. So we get there and like, you know, the room was probably like a big living room, like a little jazz room. And there's all these like hot women in there and a couple like really like flamboyant gay men. And then this prince in the very back, you could just see a silhouette of him smoking this hookah pipe with a couple women lingering around him, drinking bottle service. I don't know what it was. And they do the set. And then Adam Hunter did a set. And he likes dirty comedy. And then after the set, we got escorted out of there. And I thought, man, this guy. And then they threw a big ass party. I don't know what happens behind those doors, but Adam said, wow, this guy's like a, you know, big, you know, prince in Saudi or whatever, and you know, why would he, you know, put a resort in this little tiny island in Seychelles? And I said, because God doesn't know where Seychelles is.
Eyes wide shut shit, right?
No,
there,
it's like they just do what it's eyes wide shut, bro.
Oh wow, man.
And then it was a trip, beautiful island, you know, not fun if you're by yourself. And there's 50 hot women in the room next door.
Wow, literally, you got like Charlie Murphy.
What do you do? He's perform for a prince?
No, like when they went to this big old, on a big island, right? With what's his name? Rick James. And then Rick James, he talked about it in a Chappelle show. Rick James told all the whores there, if you want to stay here, don't fuck Charlie Murphy. Anybody fuck Charlie Murphy, you're fired.
All these chicks were like, nope, I want my 10 grand. No, they do that. They say,
what is that like? How beautiful is it, like the ocean? How
in Seychelles?
Yeah.
It's right there.
No,
on
the homeless people, right? No,
dude, it's super beautiful. It's kind of a Caribbean, you know, style looking island, like white sand beaches. I mean, it's gorgeous. There's nothing to do there. Like Adam Hunter, we went and found this bar like 10 miles away and, you know, hanging out with all these like sort of Caribbean locals. But it's beautiful. All, you know, a lot of the beaches in the Middle East are beautiful. You know, it's Africa, South Africa.
Oh, fucking yeah. Breathtaking, I bet.
South Africa's dope, man. You guys ever been there?
Just seen pictures.
Cape Town, South Africa. All the women look like Halle Berry. Dutch came in and raped and pillaged everybody.
Fucking Dutch. Making the world pretty.
And here's a cookie.
But you see a regular Dutch guy? Ugly motherfucker, bro.
Hey, that's what happens with the mix.
Who's spitting out tobacco and chocolate in his mouth.
But he bangs a white woman. Got Halle Berry or Bruno Mars.
Hell yeah, bro. She's Miss Swiss Alps. She made that bitch exotic.
Hell yeah, dog.
When are you touring again?
I start on September 30. I have an HBO special.
Oh, sweet. Congrats.
My wife, Lisa, and I, she produced it.
Congratulations.
We sold it to them and they're going to release it. And
where'd you shoot that?
At the San Jose Improv.
Oh, nice. That's a nice theater. That's haunted, isn't it?
No.
That's what they say.
A lot of comics say it's haunted.
When they bomb, boo. That's crazy. Yeah. Well, the last, I remember, man, I'm trying to think about that. Every time I showcase for anything, it always felt like a bomb. So I don't feel, I feel you on that Tonight Show set.
You know what? Whenever somebody says, you know, do this and keep it in a box, like what I wanted to do is grab the microphone, tell the audience to shut the fuck up and go into my shit. But, you know, Bob Reed was very, very adamant about, you know, just go up, make sure you say this, do it this way, don't go out of the boundaries, and la, la, la. And I was so nervous back then. I ended up, after I bombed, you know what, I went up to him in the hallway, and I go, and I bombed. And Ross Mark?
Yeah, Ross Mark.
He goes, no, you didn't. And Bob goes, yeah, you did.
I know who Bob is, gay. Yeah. Yes, you did.
You know Bob Reed.
Yeah.
So he goes.
Did he tap his shoes and told you that?
So. all the sparkles sort of showed up.
Bob's cool though.
He's very nice. So he, I said, hey, I got love at the comedy store. Do you want to follow me up to the comedy store and I'll just pop, I can pop in and just do a set there and I'll just do it over again. He looked at Mark Rossman and he was like, yeah, sure. So they followed me up to the comedy store. They parked in the lot. They walked in the OR. Tommy said, you know, I told him, hey, dude, I just bombed at the improv in front of the the Tonight Show bookers, can I just go up and do a tight 5 minutes of show? And he's like, yeah. So I went up and I had a good set, and that's what kind of got me on the show. Because you can't do comedy in front of people that don't want to listen to it. You know what I mean?
Oh, hell no.
And then have the Tonight Show bookers go, oh, you suck. You know, it was a horrible feeling in my career.
It's a bitching save, though.
It was a great save.
You got a showcase, Rodrigo, for the Tonight Show, but you got to follow Brian Holtzman, bro.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
That's the only site we have right now. 12:40 p.m. at the Laugh Factory.
I love Holtzman.
What's up, fool? Upcoming shows, July 13th through the 15th. I'll be in Corpus Christi, Texas, Mesquite Street Comedy Club. July 20th to the 23rd, Tampa, Florida, at the Tampa Improv. July 27th through the 29th, Des Moines, Iowa, Funny Bones West. August 3rd through the 6th, that's right. Levity Live, Rodrigo Torres and I, and we'll find somebody else. Also in August, Brea Improv, Milwaukee. Check out all the dates at FelipeWorld.com. Also, man, we moved, right? And we have a lot of junk. Ahmed.
We're
going to have a fucking yard sale. So we invited everybody from the podcast to buy our shit.
Where do you move?
We moved to Granada Hills.
Oh, nice. When's the garage sale over?
Oh, it's over, bro.
Oh. You didn't mean to tell me about it.
We had all the XXX sizes available. It was a fat boy yard sale. Thank you, everybody who showed up. Shout out to Alex DeLarge for bringing us Jamba Juice in the morning. Also, thank you to Victor from Eagle Rock who showed up and brought us coffee in the day. Thanks, bro. Sandra Quiros, who brought vegan donuts with Johnny Roque and Martin Rizzo. Thanks to Martin Amini for helping us pack our stuff, all the leftovers. Check him out in D.C. Good man. Also, shout out to our listener, Jose Rodriguez from Local 270. I don't even know what that is. Yeah, Master, you guys when that before the Acts of the Evil, you guys really opened the doors for a lot of young comics to actually, like, who are Middle Eastern, to actually wake up and realize that, hey, man, I could do comedy too. Because a lot of people are started touring after you guys, like Max Amini, he's doing his thing, you know, and the other guy with the long hair, my homie.
Amir K.
Yeah,
those guys are hilarious, you know.
And your family, you have a very strong family, man. Like, yeah. I will see your sister at
Amira.
Amira at Ibiza's.
Yeah,
she's awesome, bro.
She loves you, dude.
Your family, your dad's real cool.
Yep, big family, four sisters, one brother, and
It must have been hard because you have a very strong family, man. You be a comedian. What the fuck? I made it.
Well, no, because I was like the least funniest in my family. and I did okay, you know. So I always told my sisters, you guys should go into comedy. And they were just like, hell no.
Your sister's loud and funny, just like my sister.
They're just out, you know. They're like, I call them the Egyptian Kardashians. They're like beautiful too, you know. Like men are always trying to hit on them and stuff. But they're just like, you know, they're like strong women. And then, you know, all these Middle Eastern comics I started sort of orbiting around the axis of evil, it's nice to see actually that there's a comedy community with that voice, you know? The problem is people start stepping on each other's material often. So you try to really write specific. The
more
specific.
No, bro, you say Pakistani, I say Afghani.
Right. No, dude, that's my joke.
Dude, I was bad too, bro. But now. But like, if maybe, like, you are like the Richard Pryor of that scene for them, bro. Like, you were first.
For me?
Yeah, oh, you're first.
I'll take that compliment.
You'll always be first, no matter what. Like, I always give props to Paul Rodriguez because he was first.
Lit it up.
He was like the man who landed on the moon.
A lot of people, thank you, by the way, because a lot of people, and I don't care about credit and who did what first, but a lot of, I watched a lot of some of the comics that I don't really talk to anymore that I started out with or that were in the scene coming up. Who want to claim that ticket. And I'm just like, go ahead. You know, everybody knows it was me. So I got the electoral vote. You know?
Yeah, it was you, bro. It was you with the rooms, dog.
The people's champ.
The people's champ. You still acting?
Yeah, I actually, I just did this short film. Speaking of Dubai, you're going to laugh when I say this. I did this short movie that got selected in the Dubai Film Festival this year. It's called The Scapegoat. And I play this novelist who can't, it's a full drama, suspense kind of thing. Completely different from doing stand-up, and I just wanted to sink my teeth into something as an actor therapeutically because I was battling depression. It's just like
in the hotel room
and you know, therapy can do it, and you know, working out, talking to God, Oprah, Jesus, whoever it is, sometimes that stuff just doesn't work. So I was like, I need to sink my teeth into something. I started auditing acting classes in New York City, and that wasn't really jamming. And then the script came along, a little 20-minute short film called The Scapegoat. This guy's a novelist who has a week to finish a novel because he's just got a best-selling one that's, you know, got all this acclaim, and he gets a backup, a secondary chance to do another book, and he can't write it. He doesn't know what to do. So, because all the voices in his head are controlling him. So he invites all the voices in his head over for dinner. He cooks some fish, and I play all the voices. So it was like four little movies in one, where you see me literally like acting against myself, which was hilarious, because all the body doubles or the guys who were saying my lines next to me, they would just read the line and thought, I say, no, damn it, you need to, you know, explode. Go, okay, sorry.
You got it.
Yeah, but it was a fun experience. So yeah, that's the last thing I did. Before that, at Sullivan, so it's been years since I've been on, you know, done any acting, but this movie was great, and it got selected in the Dubai Film Festival, so it's nice to have a little project. I get to go to Dubai again, see some friends, go walk the red carpet, do that whole... Their film festival is out of control, bro. They spend like $100 million on their film festivals. It's crazy.
Top-notch shit over there, though.
Yeah. Dubai,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
We got to get you guys to the Middle East.
We got to, bro.
Seriously.
Stand-up comedy is breaking out now in Mexico, but they're like, it's so new. that they're stealing the jokes from the Latino comedians and translating them in Spanish.
They're in demand, really? Though.
If they're in demand. Like, it's like a hacking is okay in Mexico for your community. Right.
Jumping so over the border is fucking.
Yeah, do you run? Because I know that, what's the name? Paul Kim or what's the other one?
PK?
Paul Bolada. The comedian Paul Kim. What's the name? Paul. He's very, very straight comedian.
Aussie?
Not Paul Kim. Paul Dobalaya. I don't know. The Chinese comedian.
Badaya?
Huh? Paul Gada. Okay. Paul Gada, he told me that Chinese comedians do that.
Oh, really?
They're translating the Asian comedian stuff and making it Chinese.
You know,
you get that in Arab?
In Saudi Arabia, I think there was a lot of that going on. I don't know if they were actually hacking jokes, but there was a lot of stuff that I was already said, and then they do it in Arabic, and it just sounds funnier because they relate to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, stand-up comedy in Saudi Arabia, by the way, is huge. Again, another subject matter in my documentary, we talk about that, but it's like really growing over there. It's crazy. They have like millions and millions of YouTube followers, and Mercedes-Benz is their sponsor, and they get paid like, and these guys are just starting out. They're getting paid like $2,000-$5,000 a show. Just starting out. We're making $25 at Gotham.
I know.
When we were first starting out in Montebello.
$50 here.
But you can't, I always tell these Middle Eastern comics too, when you come to America, it's a different jam, man. Like you be ready to pull out your shovel. And start digging because you're going to be in the trenches for a long time. You're not going to get paid $2,000-$3,000 right out of the gate.
Hell no.
You know? You ain't no prince here, player.
You ain't no prince here, player. No
Can
way.
I plug my show?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll be July 17th through the 24th. I'll be at the V Theater with Edwin San Juan over there at Planet Hollywood. And also Wednesday nights in Romano's and Riverside.
Romano's and Riverside, man.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah?
Where's that?
Downtown Riverside. It's
a new
Romano.
Oh, they do comedy there?
Yeah, yeah.
I went in there. Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a Wednesday night room.
Dude, is it the upstairs?
Yeah, the concert
room. It's nice, bro. Yeah.
Dude, I live in, I mean, I grew up there. I'm going to be spending a lot of time.
Stop by, bro.
Yeah, because I wanted to tell you, because I went up to you a long time ago, but this dude named CL, I just didn't want to creep you on the show, go, yeah. Dude, what the fuck? He's like, yeah, talk to my buddy, man. He does stand-up. He's an actor. He's the one that told me about that little after-school special movie with Vince Vaughn. That you
dude, is it every Wednesday?
Every Wednesday night.
I'll definitely come check that out. That sounds fun.
Yeah, man.
And who do you take on the road with you?
Rodrigo.
All the time?
Yeah.
I want to come like open for you guys.
Hell yeah.
I'll host. I'll just do it just to have fun. That would just be fun. It'll be a fun little group, right?
It will be.
Three brown guys.
It'll be beautiful.
Three brown guys. We're not sure where the third guy is from.
we'll be the...
He's from Riverside. Like,
the Wheel Boys. Axles of comedy.
The Axles of comedy. Hell yeah, dude.
What's up, fool? We got Ahmed.
Yeah, man.
This has been so much fun coming on this podcast. You know what's so funny is I don't want to be like the podcast snob.
Yeah.
But there's too many out there. And everyone's
there is, bro.
And I get a lot like in LA, a lot in New York, you know, people just coming up with their little mini podcast, like, let's do it in my car, or let's do it in like
fuck all that. No, they want to interview everybody.
Creepy. No, I did it. Who told you that? Fred Stoller?
I did a comics podcast in his car. We were just sitting in front of the comics in the comedy
Seinfeld-y.
You want some seeds?
And we just, but a lot of comics will say, hey, man, and I'm flattered. You know, hey, man, it's not like I'm getting, you know, KLOS isn't asking me to come on the radio show. So comics are always doing each other's podcasts. And it's flattering because people go, oh, you want to hear your story. We have history, whatever. But a lot of the podcasts, they just, I don't find interesting or I don't listen to. But when we were talking on Twitter and you said, and I didn't even have your cell number, you said, hey, man, come do my podcast. Right away, I thought, oh, man, that's going to be fucking fun. And because we have history, and I'm just really happy to see where you have taken your career from the Gotham days, man, until now.
Thank you.
It's exciting to be a part of it. So when you asked me, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go do this podcast.
Hell yeah, bro. Ahmed, I'm a ver la colita. That's tough, bro. I think the devil used to say that.
Who said that?
Jeff. Okay, the room in Whittier. Sticks. The Pooha.
Oh, that's right. Oh, no, you mean Q's.
Q's, the president.
Yeah.
I like that room, bro.
That was a great room.
You would do comedy, and then you go to a little dark place.
And then outside, you'd have this whole billiard hall with, like, you know, beer flowing, people playing pool music, cute girls. That was a fun room, man.
Hey, honestly, though, before you go, back then when you had that room, like, a lot of the people used to do well, but Luke Torrey used to kill their heart, bro.
Yeah. I used to be cool. I used to be cool with Luke, and then he pulled a fast one on me one day.
A guitar?
He used to destroy in this room. And we were actually really cool. I'm not throwing him under the bus. I'll say it to his face. I said it before, but we just kind of stayed in touch. I didn't see him for many years. And then I was dating this girl who owned a restaurant in Orange County that, you know, she wanted to do comedy in. And I was like, sure, let's do it, you know? And then Luke started performing there, and then he like kind of took over the room without me knowing. Kind of, it was like
the old
switcheroo.
The old Sebastian Cetina move.
And I called him on it, and he basically told me to fuck off. And I was like, I was just like, hey, dude, you know, I'm a really nice, giving guy, and, you know, you want to burn a bridge with me? Great. But just don't ever, ever, ever ask me for anything. Because he showed me his colors. And I was like, you're not even, we're done. We're not even good anymore. I just thought it was disheartening because you can trust a lot of comments. Our industry is so dirty and backstabby and worse than the music industry, I think, you know, and we're all individual players. So everybody's not, it's not a team effort unless you
more personalized.
It is. And it's okay. And then, you know, I think it's good to bring people on board if you have that type of confidence and creativity and material. And if you could afford to do that, you know, but a lot of comics are so eager to get their own thing. And then, you know, the slightest thing, they'll just want to cut you out. And I've had a lot of people just throw fucking daggers at me left and right.
No, dude.
Fucking Comedy House of Cards.
Fool. I seen the British version even better.
Oh, man. You in the British show. British Office. It's amazing. Not in life, but the Shameless, the British one, no one can beat it.
Dude, that's better than the American one,
really?
Dog.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
fool.
Because they're shameless over there.
They're shameless, bro. This guy has sex with his fucking son's girlfriend, bro.
You do it.
What's up, Food Podcast? This week we have Ahmed Ahmed. Follow him.
Hell yeah.
And bring back the Axis of Evil 2.
Axis of Evil Comedy Tour. At Ahmed Comedy if you want to follow me on Instagram and Twitter.
What's up, fool?
What's up?